Welcome to Dissecting the 80s. I am one half of the mega podcasting powers, Trip Lano. With me, as always, a man who you do not want helping you build a bridge, but knows the value of an ice-cold Coca-Cola after a hard day's work, the Macho Mandrew.
Andrew Lano.
And we are Dissecting the 80s, a bi-weekly podcast that dissects the pop culture of our favorite decade, the 1980s.
Every other week, we dissect some piece of 80s pop culture, be it movies, television shows, pay-per-view events, or icons.
You can find more about us at facebook.com/dissectingthe80s,
instagram.com/dissectingthe80s, or dissectingthe80s on the app.
On Twitter, we are at Dissectomania, slightly different there, and you can find anything you'd ever want to know about us at dissectingthe80s.com. One other note, as we are yet to hit 100 reviews, if you review the show on iTunes, we will read it on the air. So if you want to air your grievances with us, or cause a ruckus, or do anything like that, all you gotta do is write a review on iTunes, and we will read it on the air. So that's a pretty sweet deal, I think. Along those lines, if you like the show, and hey, even if you don't like the show, tell two friends, because at least that's, you know, people talking about us, right?
Yeah, I almost said no news is good news. That's not what I meant to say. The publicity thing, isn't it? There's no such thing as bad publicity.
That's exactly. What it is. Exactly. So if you could, tell two friends. We'd like to be the pyramid scheme of podcasts. That's what we're aiming for. So we have a review to read, actually. Let me do that. This is Dear Film. Yeah, this is from Dear Film, college buddy of mine who also does a podcast himself. But the review says, Time Machine of Madness by Dear Film. This is from September 22nd, so apologies for missing it before. It's easy to remember the 1980s as an age of awesome action movies, Top Gun, Predator, and even more awesome music, Kenny Loggins, New Order. This podcast seeks to revel in the more sordid side of the 80s and plums a lot of great comedy and witty repartee out of the effort. Can't wait for them to tackle Red Dawn.
Ooh. So
that's definitely on the queue for the future, as well as perhaps Top Gun, I hate to say it, but we'll get there when we get there, I suppose. So thank you for that. We really appreciate the review, and we'll probably send one back your way, but thank you very much for taking the time there. If you'd like to hear your review read, all you have to do is go on iTunes and write your review. I'm not even asking for 5 stars. I just want your review. So we have 2 quick notes I want to make before we jump into this week's discussion. Note the first, last episode when we talked about James Bond, we talked about a possible gay James Bond or a female James Bond or a different ethnicity James Bond. And I forgot, and it was super relevant to that discussion, as soon as we finished recording and I packed up the gear, I remembered when Daniel Craig was first announced as James Bond, there was a big hullabaloo over the fact that he had blonde hair.
Really?
And that was like people going, you can't have James Bond with blonde hair. So I think that gives
James
a little bit.
Blonde.
There, I guarantee you that was a headline. Guarantee. I would bet a finger on it that was a headline somewhere when that was announced. But so that gives you a little bit better insight into the mind of the James Bond superfan, that how aggressively against a gay, black, female, what have you, James Bond they would be, because even a blonde James Bond was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
So basically Wanda Sykes as James Bond would just like blow their minds.
Triple threat Wanda Sykes.
Yeah, Wanda Sykes walking in like, I'm James Bond, and everyone's just like
just heads exploding, brain melting out of ears. The other note that I wanted to make, I seem to have forgotten.
See, I don't know if I'd want Wanda Sykes as James Bond, but I feel like I would love her as either M or Moneypenny.
Moneypenny, I think, would be the funniest, but only, I'm thinking of like a spoofy.
Oh yeah, in a spoof style.
Okay, yeah, like a skit. I would watch a skit where she's Moneypenny and she's just like over it. Like he's trying to flirt with her and she's just not having any of it.
Oh yeah,
I'm into that. What the hell was the other thing I was going to bring up?
Was it Springsteen?
Yes, thank you. So another podcast that tackles bad movies, How Did This Get Made, is done by famous Hollywood celebrities, Paul Scheer, Jason Manzoukas, some other people. And they have a companion piece for theirs where a guy goes and researches the films they talk about. We covered Maximum Overdrive all the way back in episode 5, one of my favorite episodes. Frankly, I think ours is a little funnier than theirs, and that's not just me being like a braggadocious person. It wasn't a great How Did This Get Made, in my opinion. However, one of the things that they talked about that I did not know in this article that accompanied it is that the original incarnation of that film was supposed to have Bruce Springsteen playing Emilio Estevez, playing the role Emilio Estevez played. let's not get too far down the rabbit hole. But apparently the belief of the one guy they interviewed was that he checked out as soon as he couldn't get his wish that way, and they were like, no, we're gonna go with like an actor instead of guy who plays some songs you like. But I just wanna float the possibility of a world where Bruce Springsteen played the lead in Maximum Overdrive.
And then that subsequent world where Stephen King gave a shit about the movie. Quote unquote.
Well, let's just say.
Quote unquote, I said.
He did a lot of cocaine then, but still made a movie that I hold near and dear to my heart. So I almost wouldn't want anything about that movie to change.
Yeah, I love that movie. I think it's wonderful.
I wouldn't want him to fix it in any way. Anyway, we've rambled long enough. We're starting a new tradition this year. It is the week of Thanksgiving. So if you're listening to us on your way to visit your family, whether that's plane, train, automobile, what have you, thanks. And yeah,
good job. Good on you.
Yeah, we appreciate it. But the reason we're here is because it's, and I blatantly stole this from the Alamo Drafthouse, so credit where it's due, T. Hanksgiving.
You stole this from something?
Oh, yeah, I definitely stole it. I credit where it's due, they thought of a good thing, and I stole it, because it's funny to me, and I wanted to bring our new pal, Mr. Tom Hanks, into the fold. So to start off our first ever T. Hanksgiving, we're diving in with volunteers. So you know what that means.
We gotta go back, Marty. We gotta go dissect the 80s.
When the mega powers explode.
I'm talking about the 80s.
Great Scott.
Cream of the crop. Oh, yeah.
Mega powers, yeah.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
New theme song there as well, slight tweaks to it to replace what I thought was a little empty feeling after we removed blatant racist jerkwad out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of a tweak there. We start off with the title sequence, as we always do, and we learn that this movie was directed by none other than Nicholas Meyer, who was a friend of the show from way back, the director of Star Trek IV.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, look at that.
Yes. Actually, no, wait. He directed Star Trek 2. Did he not direct Star Trek 4? I think I just made that up.
I
think Spock directed 4.
Directed 4. We had that whole discussion.
Yeah, you're right.
The bathrobe.
No, I'm sorry. Nicholas Meyer directed Star Trek 2.
So not something we've discussed on the show before.
No. This episode brings us back with another old friend, Mr. James Horner, who was the composer of our anniversary episode special, Vibes. Rest in peace, Mr. Horner. He died this year in a plane crash, which was bummer. He did a lot of James Cameron stuff and I think has already scored Avatar 2 for whenever that comes out.
Wish James Cameron had directed Vibes. Which I feel like would just give it a whole different feel.
Oh, absolutely. There'd be like a robot in there somewhere.
I'm picturing like Cindy takes some of her like her mullet hair and takes it to like Jeff Goldblum's mullet hair and like touches them together.
Oh yeah. And then at one point Cindy just decides, you know what? I'm going to stay here and be... she does that at the end of that movie. She decides not to leave. Wait, did James Cameron direct that movie?
Maybe he did.
Are we sure that it wasn't James Cameron secretly?
And then what's that guy's name? The guy that we like who died?
James Horner.
Huh?
The guy in the movie who died.
Yeah.
Peter Falk.
Yeah, Peter Falk. And then she jumps off a cliff and lands on Peter Falk and flies away.
I would watch an alternate version of Avatar where Peter Falk plays all of the giant swoopy creatures.
And like, where Cyndi Lauper plays...
Jake Sully!
Yeah, what's her name? Frack. She played Gamora and...
Oh, Zoe Saldana is the actress's name. Yes. You know the game Skyrim? We're getting such a tangent here, but this is the last anecdote before we get back to basics.
I'm familiar with the game, yes, but I haven't really played much.
But you know what it is. It's like dragons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a modification somebody built for that game that turns all of the dragons into Macho Man Randy Savage. So, like, normally if you're about to fight a dragon, there's like a... Rawr, rawr, like, off in the distance, like a dragon noise. That was a bad dragon noise combo there. But so instead, if you install that mod, it's like... Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. And then it, like, lands, and it's this giant Macho Man Randy Savage. But, like, all it really does is, like, swap out the dragon's head for Macho Man's.
Oh, God.
So it's, like, a long purpley thing, and then this like, neck, and then Macho Man's head stuck on the top of it. It's kind of wonderful.
Did I tell you that I saw a Macho Man on Halloween?
D- Did you really? You didn't take a picture with him? What the hell?
He was very quickly walking the other way, and I barely had time to be like, it's Macho Man!
You should have run him down. I would have wept with joy if you had texted me that picture.
Like a great Macho Man.
I was searching all night praying that I'd run into a Ric Flair, because I was wearing my Dusty Rhodes costume, and I was like, oh my god, if I run into a Ric Flair, it's going to just make my universe. But sadly, no Ric Flairs.
It was just like he wore the purple shirt with the sunglasses on it. That and then the bandana, and he had the sunglasses on.
That's close enough. That's in the ballpark of a Macho Man.
Yeah, like me and my friends were walking to one bar, and he and his friends were walking quickly the other way. And like as I was talking, I like saw it, and I was like, Macho Man?
Ugh, that is a true travesty. Anyway, so let's jump in here on Volunteers. This is the movie where Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson rekindled their relationship that led to them getting married.
They met in this movie.
Nope, they met on Bosom Buddies.
Oh.
She was a one or two episode actress on that, I believe, and then they kind of re-met on this and struck up a relationship and eventually gave us Chet Hayes and Colin Hanks, so.
Yeah, Colin Hanks does a whole lot. Wait, isn't there another Hanks kid that's a rapper?
That's Chet Hayes.
Oh.
So thanks for one of the two, I guess, because I'm in the bag for Colin Hanks.
Yeah, you got Colin. Colin's done some cool stuff.
I dig quite a few things he's been in. He was awesome in Fargo. Orange County is an underrated movie.
I thought that was him in Orange County.
Yes, yeah. I'm going to stop talking about this because then I'll start talking about Orange County, and that's not what we're going to talk about. We're here to talk about Volunteers.
We're just talking about
dissecting the 2002 film Orange County. It's funny to read reviews of this, and I don't often go back and try to seek out reviews of the movies we're doing, but I happened to see a couple of these. And what was really most interesting to me was watching this from a modern perspective. I've seen Tom Hanks in, I don't know, 20 movies. That's a ballparky guess, but that's
probably... I've watched him pee like a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, it's easily 20 movies of his that I've seen. I've seen him play jerks and nice guys and you know, real like wholesome characters and all sorts of running the gamut type performances from him. But I've always found Tom Hanks to be incredibly charming, and I think that kind of carries through a lot of his work, that even when he's playing a jerky guy, he still has kind of a charm to him. And
see,
it's funny.
I feel like he doesn't play jerks that often, though.
Not as much. He definitely did that more early in his career, and then kind of became this charming everyman type guy, and didn't do it as much. But I definitely think there's latter day roles, we're talking 20 years ago, I guess, but his performance in A League of Their Own is pretty gruff.
Oh, that's true.
He's sort of like a jerk with a heart of gold, but he's definitely pretty gruff in that movie. I'm sure if I sat here and thought about it, I could find some other ones. But he's definitely... you're correct. He definitely plays more like wholesome, everyman, good guy characters than anything else. Because obviously, you should do what you're best at. And that's clearly what he's best at. But he, in this stage of his career, hadn't done too much. And there was a ton of press that was like, Hanks, who thinks he can coast on his charm, doesn't do much of this movie. And it was really like lambasting the performance, which is hilarious to me because watching it now, I think his performance is the best part of this whole stupid movie.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
And it makes this fairly unwatchable movie pretty entertaining to watch. Blue Blood Hanks are sneering and a snobbing all over the place.
Yeah, as soon as he started talking, I was just like, is he going to do this stupid voice the whole movie?
He is. Spoiler alert. He is going to do the stupid voice
the whole movie. Is he going to do the announcer from Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous voice this whole movie?
It's sort of between that and the whatever Family Guy's character with the big bottom tooth is.
James Bottom Tooth.
Is that what it is?
I think it's James Bottom Tooth.
That seems right, but it's been quite a while since I watched that show or seen that character, but that's sort of the same exact voice he has. I'm like, yes, the stock market is just atrocious today. But Tanks is in that ballpark. So he was playing cards and he grifts.
The woman calls him a
does
cretin.
He grift? Yes.
A cretin. And if we learned anything from Monsters, Inc., it's cretin.
It is cretin.
If you're going to insult him, do it properly.
Right. And he... So in this initial card game scene, do you think that he was cheating or not? Because I really couldn't tell what we were supposed to think.
I have no idea. And my thing is, I don't play poker. Is bluffing really that asshole of a move?
No, bluffing is a standard part of playing poker.
That's what I thought. I thought the whole point was being able to bluff and show your cards.
But it's a game of luck, obviously. So there's a overwhelming portion of poker that can be attributed to luck. But it's also a good poker player is good at bluffing and reading when other people are bluffing, and that's all part of playing cards. But I wonder if it, like, I lived through the poker boom, so I wonder if I'm biased.
Yeah, I don't know.
That poker strategy before that was just you dealt with the cards you got and you moved on and you didn't try to do strategy, but that doesn't seem to make any sense because presumably they were, you know, trying to win money back then too, which would have included bluffing. Now, had he been cheating, like palming a card or doing something like that, obviously that's worth getting mad over, but I was very confused about this whole thing. But anyway, so he walks out with a whole boatload of money, and the owner of the bar is like, well, these guys are going to kill you. And he just goes to get a drink, and he drinks Jim Beam out of a snifter, which I thought was kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
You're drinking fairly cheap bourbon out of the snifter, and I was wondering if this was a budgetary thing, or, like, that's just a legitimately, maybe Tom Hanks liked Jim Beam at the time.
I wouldn't think it's a budgetary thing, because you can get any bottle you want. Like, just because it is a Jim Beam bottle is a choice in a movie.
You would think. Unless they legitimately just, like, bought a bottle of Jim Beam and that was that.
I hope. I mean, given the rest of this movie, I'm not surprised. Was this a TV movie?
It was not, but it sure looks like one.
Well, it was HBO Silver whatever.
HBO Silver?
Yeah. Distributed by, like, HBO Silver.
No, I think this was, like, legitimately released. Look it up.
I'm pretty sure it's HBO Silver something.
I don't know what HBO Silver is, but I'm fairly certain this is a legitimately released in theaters movie. Anyway, we have a really interesting cameo to at least me. He goes home, and his father is played by George Plimpton, who is a writer that I'm pretty fond of.
Is he related to Martha?
I don't believe so. George Plimpton's big thing was that he would go try stuff. And this included he played a preseason game for the Detroit Lions. He played goalie for the Boston Bruins. He played tennis against some tennis pro whose name I forget. He learned to play a stringed instrument and played in an orchestra. And he would write a book about these things. And he would go hands-on and show people the day-to-day and the life of various professionals.
Kind of like a Mike Rowe?
Yeah, but
HBO. This was distributed by HBO Pictures.
Oh, so that must have been theatrical, though.
Yeah, I don't know why, but HBO, it's just that HBO Pictures.
Okay. Anyway, so George Plimpton's a guy whose career I am jealous of, because that's the kind of writing I like to do best, is like, I'm going to go do a thing and then tell you all about it. That's sort of my favorite. So I was kind of surprised to see him here, because he only acted in a handful of things, and I still can't quite figure out why he was here. As far as I know, he did not write a book about it, but he tells Tom Hanks that he's not going to bail him out of his big gambling debt, and Tom Hanks begs a bunch, and he's still like, no. Not
but he does, though.
He tries to help him figure out a payment for it, but he doesn't just write a check and say, get out of jail free.
That's true. Okay.
So the guys from the poker game come to collect. Tom Hanks runs out the back door, escapes, and the guy from the poker game starts chasing him. And I know this is going to sound stupid, but I really did enjoy this stupid map chase.
I didn't. I looked at it and went, is this Full Moon High? Did I get tricked into watching Full Moon High again?
See, this was more entertaining to me than Full Moon High, because it's Tom Hanks and not Adam Arkin. And two, because they had their faces superimposed over the map and it kept cutting back and forth. And something about the weird cutting of it made me giggle, that they were like, Hanks, chase guy, Hanks, chase guy. And the red line, blue line, or red line, yellow line, whatever it was on the map.
Yeah, I mean, it had its moments, but generally speaking, I was just kind of like, this is so dumb.
I mean, yes, it was highly stupid, but that's, I think, part of the charm of it for me. We glossed over a couple things here. Hanks owed a significant amount of money because he had racked up a semester or year's worth of gambling debt. Then he tried to bet it all on a basketball game. Didn't go his way, so now he owes a ton of money to this guy. And his roommate, who is a peacenik guy, and so Hanks is bedding some woman, and he comes in, and he's like, you're all over my camping gear that I'm going to use to go off to be in the Peace Corps.
Oh, yeah, and it sounded like Woody was having sex.
Oh, that's a disgusting way to put it.
It's exactly what it sounded like, though.
He didn't say yeehaw or anything.
No, but they were both saying weird stuff, and he had his, like, rich guy voice on.
There's a snake in my boot.
And then he dropped the rich guy voice and had, like, a guttural, just a sort of like a vocal sound.
Somebody poisoned the water hole.
Yeah. Ride like the wind, bullseye.
Buzz Lightyear to the rescue. Wait, wrong. So close.
Wrong dude.
So close. I did not make the Woody connection to the sex scene, but I guess that would be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Had I made that connection.
Yeah.
So he shows up to the roommate who's about to board a plane and ride off to the Peace Corps, and he's like, hey, I gotta take your position, you can have my car. So he swaps him the car for
the dude takes the car.
Oh yeah, that's right.
He's like, fine, I'll switch with you if you'll give me your car and like legitimately sign over the title to me, not just give me the keys.
Yeah. So he does that, he hops on the plane, and he gets seated next to John Candy.
And the gambling debt guy jumps onto the plane.
Yes, and he's hanging on the outside, and then there's an announcement that's like, flight 4268, you have a man on the wing, hanging off the door. And the pilot does that, like, gas brake thing, like, and like he falls off.
Oh, I thought it was like, you know when, like, cars have hydraulics and it bounces in the front? It looked like they did, like, a bounce.
It's not Soul Plane!
No, I thought it was like he started to like retract the wheels.
No, I think he did like a gas brake jobber.
And the guy fell and should have become just a bag of soup.
He should have been, but alas, we did not get to see him turn into a bag of soup.
So he sits next to America's sweetheart, John Candy.
Yes. Now, I'm going to blow your mind here, I think.
Okay.
They're supposed to be either, it's just college, right? It's not grad school, right?
Yeah, college. Undergrad.
So they're all supposed to be 22 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This movie came out in August of 1985.
Mm-hmm.
1 week later, John Candy played Jack Chester from Summer Rental, where he played a father of three. Literally 1 week apart. These movies came out 1 week apart in 1985.
See, he looked kind of thin in this movie.
I know!
And he's not thin in Uncle Buck.
No, he's not at all.
Huh.
So I don't know if this was a situation where this movie sat for like a long time, because he looks significantly younger in this movie than in Summer Rental.
I would agree. Also, just on a note, he is a goddamn national treasure.
I will say this is probably my least favorite John Candy performance I've ever seen.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I like it.
Still my number two comedic actor on my list of comedic actors.
He just went for it all the time. So it's even when this
he's a movie, joy to watch.
Right, and this script is garbage and everybody knows it, but he still is there busting his butt and giving it all on a movie that seven people are going to see and is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I love Summer Rental so much, because it's an equally terrible movie with a terrible script, and he's just like, no, whatever, I'm just going to go for it.
But a wonderful score by Jimmy Buffett.
Not a score, just the one track.
I thought they were all his songs.
I don't believe it's all Jimmy Buffett, no.
Oh.
I would say possible Stay Tuned, but I like that movie too much.
I do too. But he's just wonderful, and it's nice to see him in a movie. Because, I mean, I watch his movies for my own benefit, and just like, I just want to watch them. But it's nice to watch for this medium, John Candy.
Just a guy you like hanging out with for 2 hours?
Yeah, it's great. Number one, comedian, Madeline Kahn. Number two, John Candy. Number three, Mel Brooks.
We might get to see some of those other people later on. Who knows?
I know.
Not in this episode, just like one day. No. That's not, we're not telling you Madeline Kahn is in Volunteers, because she's
not. My god, I would die if Madeline Kahn was in Volunteers. If she played Rita Wilson's character.
So, I'm glad you mentioned her, because Rita Wilson is a pretty good actress, and I'm sure is a lovely woman. But 1985 Rita Wilson smoked a lot of cigarettes, as did Tom Hanks.
I don't know if you smoked that much.
No, I'm not talking about in the movie. I'm talking about actual real person, because holy crap, the smoker's teeth in this movie are disgusting.
See, I was watching it. I watched like a bootleg version from a website, so the quality wasn't great.
Oh, I watched this in HD from, it's on one of the cable channels right now, one of the pay channels, Cinemax or what have you. And Tom Hanks, John Candy, and Rita Wilson all look like they smoke six packs a day.
Well, Tom Hanks does smoke six packs a day on screen.
Right, but nobody else does, and they all look like they were just eating cigarettes. You know that thing where, like, your fang tooth, your canine tooth, if you're a smoker, turns a disgusting color because you smoke in the same... Like, all smokers, wherever they smoke, usually it's that tooth because they smoke on the corner of their mouth. Some people smoke in the middle. But wherever you smoke, your teeth get discolored. And if you're around a heavy smoker, they have one disgusting tooth always, at least. Mm-hmm. These people had, like, all disgusting teeth. It looked like they put 12 cigarettes in their mouth and lit them simultaneously and just, like...
They have like a folding fan of cigarettes.
Yes, it was insane. They all have just the disgustingest teeth, and I don't normally notice such things. And I, you know, I'm sure all of them, well, not John Candy because he's no longer with us, but I'm sure Tom and Rita have given up smoking, and their teeth look way better these days. But holy cats, they not look great 30 years ago.
Well, also, everyone smoked. You could smoke in a hospital 30 years ago.
Right? They smoked on the plane.
Oh, they did smoke on the plane.
I can't... that is a world I'm so glad I wasn't alive for, because I just... I could not be able to deal with that.
Well, I also like that you and I were alive... I mean, me, less so. But we were alive in the time when you'd go to a restaurant and they would say smoking or non-smoking.
You were alive then, for sure.
I know, I said I was alive, but I don't...
Well, that's a thing. It's not even nationwide, as I found out. When I went to New Orleans, they had just banned indoor smoking. I was there in October of 2015, just a month ago, and they had just banned indoor smoking in September.
Oh, my God. 'Cause
one night, I grabbed a cigar, and I was walking around in the French Quarter and just listened to people playing music on the street, and I'd, like, hear a bar playing a song or something I liked, and I'd camp outside, and there was always a bouncer, like, quickly running over, like, hey, you can't go inside, and I was like, no, I know, I'm just gonna be out here, is that okay, do I need to get away from the door, and he's like, oh, yeah, and so literally, you could stand, there's not even, like, in Maryland, you have to be a certain number of feet from an entrance.
Oh, yeah, there's, in Pennsylvania, too.
Well, there's not even that in New Orleans. You can literally stand at the you can literally stand at the entrance or exit of a bar and smoke in it, like smoke wafting into the club, but they don't care. It's so strange.
That is weird.
It's a strange little republic down there. Anyway, so we finally get Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson next to each other. He sits down with her on the plane, and they get there, and he's like, hey, basically... you want to do it? And she's like, what? No. Are you crazy? And he's like, I think I've put in the hours, don't you?
He plays such a good asshole.
And such a creepy, gross monster asshole, too. I really enjoyed that. Like, yes, he's disgusting and you're supposed to hate him, but it's hard to be that good.
At that.
Right. So they deplane.
But I love that he goes to show her. He's like, I'm charming. Watch this. And he goes to the stewardess and is like, or the flight attendant, or whatever we call them now. And is like, hey, do you want to go have sex? And she's like, I wish I could, but I can't tonight.
And it's like, yeah, it's Tom Hanks. What are you thinking about, Rita?
It is like in his prime Tom Hanks.
Yeah, this is peak Hanks. So they deplane, and we meet the guy who's running the Peace Corps, whose name is Mike? No, his knife is
his
named
knife
Mike.
Is named Mike. That
I don't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
John.
Okay. John, who, as we're going through this, my notes are like, this guy's hilarious. I love this character. Da-da-da-da-da. He's so perfect. Da-da-da. Why isn't there more of this guy in the movie? And then there's a hard turn, which we'll get to. But so,
you didn't
I just
see
want to
hard
say,
turn coming?
Not to Rape Town, no.
Okay.
I didn't think he was going to be a rapist. I just thought... he's obviously going to play into the end of this as a bad guy or something, but for right now, I'm really enjoying him being this weirdo who's just obsessed with his knife and his helicopter and blah, blah, blah.
See, I liked the idea that the Peace Corps is a punishment.
Well, it would be for me, too.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? A good friend of mine is in the Peace Corps right now, actually. She's just wrapping up her first year. And, like, I was like, oh, where are you going? She was like, Kosovo. And I was like, do you know what I know Kosovo from? And she's like, what? And I was like, the phrase war-torn Kosovo.
I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things that if you go and do it, it's wonderful and fantastic.
But she's also not sleeping in a hut. Like, it is not the way it's depicted in this film.
Well, it is if you go to the jungle.
I guess, yeah. I think she's doing more of it. She's teaching.
That makes sense.
Is her thing. So she's being...
Most Peace Corps stuff is educationally based, whether it's teaching people like first aid or something like that. I don't think it's typically go do bridge on the River Kwai.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think it's hey white people Go save these not white people.
Well, it's not even save. It's go and add a bridge that they don't need and haven't asked for by tearing down a bunch of their sacred land and wood and using it to build a very modern looking bridge mm-hmm. with materials that we're not going to explain that you have.
Yeah, this the bridge thing was kind of shoehorned in there.
So we finally get to the camp after we get off the helicopter, and did you say his name was John? I forgot already.
Yes, John.
John awkwardly hits on Rita Wilson, and
she is super into it.
Yeah, which is weird because objectively, Hanks is 10 times more attractive than he is, and way more charming.
Yeah, but I think it's because
you think it's that helicopter pilot bump.
Well, that too,
because like that makes Takei way more attractive in Star Trek IV.
Yeah. If a dude, if there's two dudes at a bar of equal attractiveness, and then one's like, "Hey, my helicopter's double parked. Come with me while I move it." That dude's the one I'm going home with.
Okay, but what if the options are a 10, Tom Hanks, and like a 6?
That dude was an 8.
You think he's an 8?
That dude, if Hanks is a 10, that dude's an 8.
You think they're that close?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess that's why we differ. I did not think they were that close in level of attractive. Mm-hmm. But they get off the helicopter, and there's this montage of like setting up camp, doop a doop a doop. And my favorite part of it is John Candy sharpening these pencils.
Oh my god, there's so many pencils.
And I really legitimately think they made John Candy sharpen like 50 pencils.
See, in my head, they didn't, because John Candy is brilliant of his own accord and was just like, guys, I know what to do. Just keep it rolling. And like reached into his bag and just pulled out props that he brought from home.
He just started decorating the set.
Yeah, and they were like, yeah, roll it. And he pulls out like he went to Costco and got number 2 Ticonderoga pencils.
He really did. It's an absurd number of pencils he pulls out of his bag, but there's a pencil cup with a good 50 pencils in it. Not exaggerating, a good 50 pencils. And he...
The desk is also covered in pencils.
Yeah. Covered top to bottom in pencils. It's crazy. Like, it just doesn't make a lick of sense that he has this many pencils. So some poor bastard intern obviously had to sharpen like 100 pencils. But in my head, it was actually John Candy just being method about it. Like, no, I got this. It's cool.
That's what I said. He just pulled. He's like, hang on, guys. I know what to do. I got my character down.
Yeah, and he just legitimately sharpened 100 pencils. Another part of this montage that we get to see is that poor Getty Watanabe, who you probably know better as Long Duk Dong.
That was my note was literally, is that Long Duk Dong? Or I'm at the risk of sounding racist. Yeah. Is that Long Duk Dong?
It's sad because all he gets to do in his career at this point is play super racist caricatures.
Mm-hmm. Although apparently he didn't see Long Duk Dong as racist.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's a point of contention because he says, you know, I just was trying to make people laugh, and it made people laugh, and I never thought about it being a thing that people look at and study and break down as a thing. So people started kind of like Asian Americans were kind of accosting me, like, how could you do that? Like, how could you do that, you dumb dumb? And he was like, I didn't think about it. I never saw it that way.
I mean, to be fair, 30 years ago
was very different.
Not that it makes it right, but obviously the cultural norm of everything was very different 30 years ago, and so it might have just been, to him, it didn't feel like a bad thing. It's funny, have you watched Master of None on Netflix, Aziz Ansari's new show?
I haven't. Is it good?
I really like it, but one of the more interesting episodes deals with this pretty aggressively. It's about Indian actors and what their life is like, because I'm sure a good portion of this is Aziz's real life. Well, maybe before Parks, when he kind of broke out big, but, you know, getting called in to play cab driver number 4 and them wanting to do like a super stereotypical racist caricature. And the craziest part of the episode is, and I don't remember this, but it was within the last 2 or 3 years. There's this montage of people, either Indians doing really horrible over the top caricature, kind of racist things, or white people playing Indians like Mike Myers in The Love Guru, which is not that old, and that was like a major feature film that was just like brown 10 years old. It's not even 10 years old. I think it's in the 2010s.
You think?
Yeah, I think Love Guru was like 2009, 2010. It's not. It's very recent. Ooh. But the other one is Ashton Kutcher did a Pop Chips commercial where he was playing a quote unquote Bollywood producer.
What?
Legitimately in brown face makeup, wearing the sort of typical Indian dress shirt, the sort of, you know, shiny material, and that sort of cropped collar. Do you know what I'm describing?
A Mandarin collar.
Yeah, sort of like that. I mean, what I've seen, I have been to actually.
Oh my god!
Did you just look it up?
Yes.
So, like, that's like a year or two ago.
These are the Bombay.
Yeah, and he does the voice like Apu from The Simpsons. It's bananas. Like, how that crossed through. Like, this is the thing that always blows my mind, and we've talked about this before in relations to movies, where it's like, there's so many people who had to approve this. So many people had to look at this and go, yep, sure, no problem. And still it gets on TV. So it was kind of fresh in my mind watching this movie in relation to having just watched that episode of the show, because I'm sure there was a very extremely similar thing happening for Getty, that, you know, he had to deal with this kind of shit, and whether he thought he was, you know, being culturally sensitive or not, 30 years later, it's kind of a bad look. The other one that they talk about, and it was a movie I had on the list to do for this show, and now I'm contemplating whether we should do it, but Fisher Stevens plays the Indian doctor, like, scientist guy in Short Circuit.
Really?
Yes. In full-on brown face and the whole deal. And I had legitimately, like, I've seen that movie, I was a kid, but I had no idea it was a white guy. And that's, like, a major focal point of the episode. Like, yeah, Fisher Stevens played that Indian guy.
Well, also, my favorite was when I learned, because I've never seen Breakfast at Tiffany's, and I've only seen bits and pieces of it, but someone was like, you know, like Mickey Rourke in Breakfast at Tiffany's, and they showed a picture. I was like, there's no way that's from that movie.
It is.
And then I was like, oh my god, that is from that movie. And I don't know, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you're just like, oh man, that's a bad look. I've never seen that whole movie, but it's one of those things where when you watch it, surely you have to think the whole time, like, oh, that's a bad look. It's like, you know, I'm stealing this from another show that I listened to, but they talked about the first talkie was Al Jolson in, what's the name of that movie?
The Jazz Singer.
The Jazz Singer. It's blackface.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, like
in
this
purest form of like what blackface is.
Right. They're like, oh, so this is the first time we used sound in a motion picture. And they, of course, likened it to, because it's a nerdy show, how Jar Jar Binks is the first completely CGI character in a film. And it's just like a really super racist black guy stereotype, even though he's an alien. Mm-hmm. Like, it's 100% like a...
Yes.
This is a Birth of a Nation stereotype that he plays. So it's one of those like, oh man, we sucked for, like, we're not great now, but we used to be really bad. So that's all I can think of. Like, every time I see Getty Watanabe in a movie, I hope I'm saying his last name right. Every time I see him, I'm like, oh man, all of your roles are like a nightmare to watch now. Like, Long Duck Dong is really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's like that movie is funny and charming and has its own kind of thing going on, but even if you're laughing with him and not at him, which is very debatable, it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that movie in general has a lot, has more uncomfortable moments than people realize.
Well, yeah. I mean, pretty much anything to do with relationships made 30 years ago is a little bit awkward.
The whole underwear thing is weird.
Yeah, but that's like fun weird. She's in on that.
No, she's not.
She gives him her underwear.
Yeah, but she doesn't know he's going to sell tickets to see it.
Yeah, but she gives it to him knowing he's going to be a weirdo about it. You don't just hand yourself... Listen, you see 1986 Anthony Michael Hall, and he asks you for your underpants, you know something weird is happening after that. Best case scenario is people paying money to look at them, okay? Because worst case scenario is not something I want to talk about on this family-run podcast. Thank you, and good night.
Fair enough.
John Candy meets a tiger.
And speaks Chinese.
Yes, but he meets a tiger, and there is great tiger acting.
Oh my god, that tiger
just stupendous.
Was Union.
It was absolutely, I mean, total snub that year for best animal-related performance
for best
in the Oscars.
Tiger.
Yeah, just totally robbed at the Academy Awards that year, because that was the best tiger performance I think I've ever seen. And that includes that CGI one from Life of Pi.
Oh, I was going to say from Madagascar?
No, that's, I'm all about the penguins in that particular feature.
Oh yeah, the penguins are the best part of Madagascar.
So we get a bunch of like really stupid homage gags.
Well, hang
Tom
on.
Tom Hanks is so wearing... They okay, have, go for it.
So John Candy is speaking to the natives in Thai, and they're not putting up subtitles to say what he's saying, which I was now, like, is that's a weird missed opportunity for hilarious.
See, I thought the reason they weren't doing that is because Tom Hanks can't understand what's being said. And we're supposed to identify as Tom Hanks in this movie.
Oh.
Because later, when Getty is doing the translation and stuff, they do put the subtitles up because Tom Hanks is supposed to know what he's saying.
Well, she later, and Rita Wilson says it too. When Rita Wilson's alone talking to the people about germs, she gets subtitles.
Okay, then I don't know. I give up.
It's weird. It's very bizarre.
No, you're right. That's a strange inconsistency.
I was like, guys, come on. Because then later, the subtitles come up, and they literally read them on the screen.
Right.
They, like, lean over them in this weird sort of meta break the fourth wall moment.
Right. That makes no sense in the movie that we're watching, but somehow they're like, oh, yeah, this is totally fine and normal, and don't think about it too hard.
Yeah. It was like a full moon high going overboard moment.
Oh, yeah. So they do this montage of dumb stuff, and we've got Tom Hanks with his tie tied around his head, a la Rambo.
Damn, he smokes a lot, was my note.
It's so many cigarettes. And we've got the army capturing John Candy, which was a bit I kind of liked.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't his name stupid? Is it Tom Tucker from Tacoma, Washington?
It's Tom
Tuttle?
Tupple?
It's Tom. It's all alliterative. It's Tom Tut from Tacoma, Washington.
I think it's Tupple.
Okay, Tom Tupple from Tacoma, Washington, which is kind of fun to say once, but they say it about 48 times in this movie, which is why I'm going to keep calling him John Candy.
Mm-hmm. You get three times, guys. Learn comedy. The rule of three.
Rule of three. Escalate and stop at three. But he gets captured, and then in the middle of a poker game that Tom Hanks is playing to win, like, live chickens in people's clothes.
That was the best. He said, let's see your bets, guys. Someone put a little piggy on the table. Someone put a chicken on the table. And he was like, guys, no.
What am I going to do with a live chicken? Like, get out of here. And so this guy comes storming in.
I was like, I think this is what Kim Jong-un sees himself as.
Oh, 100%.
The hair. See, I saw the hair, but that's what Kim Jong-un thinks his hair looks like.
Yes, he totally thinks he looks super cool. And he comes in as the king of the universe, and Getty is like, yo, you don't want to mess with this guy. And Tom Hanks is like, whatever, I'll do what I want. Cigarette, cigarette, cigarette.
Well, the best is Tom Hanks goes, and who the hell are you?
Yeah.
And very clearly doesn't know who this dude is. And then
nope.
Getty is like, don't you know who that is? And no, he very clearly doesn't.
Or he would have not gone, and who might you be? Because that's not what you say to a person you recognize.
That's not,
I know you're from a different culture.
That's not how adults greet each other. Who are you?
Hi, who are you? Very nice to see you. But he also has like 150 medals on his chest.
Oh my God. I'm surprised. And they're all on the left side. I'm surprised
right,
he wasn't
it's
like,
very lopsided.
I'm surprised he wasn't leaning.
Yeah, I would be, because he has 48 pounds of medals pinned to his chest. And, in addition to that, a sick haircut, and, to cap the trifecta, a sweet matte painting hideout base.
Yeah, complete with dramatic music.
Yes, but they do one of those awkward, where the matte painting is too close to the foreground for a real conducive movie shot to be happening, and so they're all, like, standing there with their hands on their hips outside the castle, and clearly they're just standing a foot away from a wall, mm-hmm. but to make it look bigger, it's this giant matte painting.
It's like, and they play, like, the dramatic hamster song.
And then they usher them inside where we meet the
but they show the castle three or four times, and every time they do, they play the dramatic hamster like bah, bah, bah.
They absolutely do. So we go inside and we meet the femme fatale, who has one a wicked nose wing. Nope.
A nose wing.
She has a nose wing. It's really weird. She tries to fly, but there's only the one wing, and so she just doesn't get off the ground very high. No, she has a wicked nose ring and super crazy fingernails.
Yeah, they're kind of useless.
What's that X-Men character that you dug? Yeah, yeah, she's got those claws.
Except Lady
of Doom.
Deathstrike actually has metal claws.
Well, she has metal fingernails.
Yeah, but I mean, hers are like adamantium. Like they can, like she, they're more of a thing than just having rings that are sharp.
Are they rings? I thought they were, like, grafted into her.
Oh, maybe. I think in her first appearance, they were rings. In her second one, they were like press-ons, her acrylics.
Yeah, because she jabs them into the bar real weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
at this point,
poor actress has to pretend like she's stuck in the bar.
Yeah.
Clearly she's not.
And she does that weird, like an adult playing with a small child who's easily fooled of like, mm-hmm. I can't get my hand out from underneath the couch cushion, type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's very awkward.
Oh, we didn't talk about the femme fatale's name.
I legitimately don't remember what it was, so please take over.
Her name is Roussier.
Oh.
Her mother was English.
Oh, God. I'm cringing.
Like, this movie is a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, that's real cringy. So, it's funny. I watched about 40 minutes of this about a year ago, and then I had the idea of, like, oh, this would be perfect when we do our Tom Hanks episode, and I stopped watching it. And a lot of the really racist stuff is in in the second half of the movie. And so, I got to, like, have these cringes firsthand watching it this time of, I definitely remember hearing her name the first time and being like, oh man, that's awful.
Yeah. Oh my God. She said it and I was like, oh my God, please don't clarify and say that. Yep. Your name is Roussier.
So we're going to continue calling her Lady Deathstrike. And this sets in motion essentially the plot of the movie. Tom Hanks has met with this big general and he is going to be building this bridge so that the general has better access to his drug sales. And if he does that, he's going to give Tom Hanks a bunch of money. I think he owes 40 grand. He's going to give him 60.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to give him a ticket out of there so he can go back home. Because while he was not signed up for the Peace Corps, George Plimpton pulled some strings and got him signed up for it after they landed.
Of course.
Because he's rich and why not?
Did we talk about John Candy being brainwashed?
Oh, no, we didn't. I'm skipping all over shit.
Yeah, John Candy is... It's a really cute moment that I think is in the trailer.
Which one?
Where they're like, you will be brainwashed against your capitalist pigs. And he's like, me? America's son? Ha ha ha. As if. And they do like the screen like flips around. And suddenly he's wearing their uniform and being like, capitalism is the worst. Imperialist pig dog.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. He is just wonderful. Like, even in this terrible movie, he's totally awesome.
He's just wonderful.
He has, when he's captured, a Washington State shirt, and he's singing their fight song, which is some generic, very college theme song sounding like, fight, fight for, blah, 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 blah. And later on, it's a great callback where the army who brainwashed him then elected him leader, and learned his fight song because reasons.
Yeah, I don't understand that one, but
I don't understand a lot of this movie, so it's sort of par for the course.
Yeah, I'll take that.
So,
And then the helicopter dude gives Rita Wilson the statue. The statue has, is it like a, I guess you could call it a fertility statue?
Yeah, I think that's what it's supposed to be.
I don't know. It's...
You can just say it.
It's got a big old dick. Like, curved straight upward, like in the Goonies.
Like, into his own mouth, basically.
Yeah. And she... It's a great moment, because she clearly sees it before the audience does, and then she turns it so the audience gets to see it. And I was just like, what is this movie?
And like, this is the part where I'm like getting into how funny this guy is, because he's just a crackpot. He's giving her these weird fertility idols, he's naming his knife. It's just all sorts of dumb, wonderful, stupid stuff.
Oh, this is when they read the subtitles, I think. No, it's, is it?
I didn't take the best notes in the middle section of this movie. I think I was sleepy.
Oh, this is when the neon, oh no, now there's no subtitles for the more they speak more. They speak more Thai. There is no subtitles. And then he builds the bar for what's her face.
Right. So Tom Hanks ends up having this awesome bar, and Getty has become his right hand man. So he goes to Rita Wilson while she's in the shower, which is weird, and is like, hey, Tom Hanks wants you to come have drinks with him. And she's like, pfft. And he's like, well, just do it, I guess. I don't know. Just show up. And she's like, fine. And she shows up. And Tom Hanks is like, hey, I have 87 different boozes. And she's like, I'm pooping in a hole in the ground. How did you get bourbon?
Yeah.
Like, what in the hell? I have no toilet paper.
I haven't seen toothpaste in 2 months.
That's the actual line that she says. But all of the other things also seem true based on what we're talking about here. That there's not a great access to bathroom facilities.
Well, also, there's this... apparently, there was a whole controversy about the fact that there's they drink Coke in this scene.
Oh, yeah, I was going to get to that. So she turns him down for the drink, and he's like, well, how about an ice cold Coca-Cola? And she's like, a what? And he's like, vanilla, lemon, or cherry? And she's like, oh, plain. And then they drink these Cokes as if they're fat Marlon Brando in Last Tango in Paris, and they're X-rated and kind of French, because holy crap, is it weird how orgasmic her face. It's as if they really didn't let them drink any Coke while they were filming this movie, and then the last day of filming they shot this scene and Rita Wilson was like, oh thank god, like I've been drinking poison water and pooping my brains out for a month, but now I have icy cold American Coke.
See, I didn't think of it that I didn't see it that way.
I had read the bit before I saw the thing, and it's one of those things where I always make fun of product placement. It's something I do a lot in movies, especially modern ones, because I think there's legitimate product placement akin to, say you're watching, I don't know, what's a show people watch?
Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, sure. Say you're watching Big Bang Theory. Instead of them drinking, like, beer with generic labels, I'd much rather see them drinking Sam Adams or Sierra Nevada or whatever. Like, get a local beer where they live, or get Bud Light, or get whatever, but it's, to me, I'd rather see them drinking the actual products. It makes the show more realistic to me. On Sons of Anarchy, after the first season, they got a deal with, I think it was Miller Lite, I honestly don't remember, which I guess speaks to how little that advertising is worth, but also the beer that I drink. Miller Lite or Bud Light, and then from the rest of the show, when they were drinking beers, they were drinking Miller Lite or Bud Light, which to me, again, is real. Like, I would much rather see a real beer than just a generic can that says beer, or that Heinzler that everybody drinks because it's, you know, this safe fake one. So, if you stuck me in the jungle for 2 months and I had no access to toothpaste and was pooping in a hole and showering with rainwater coming out of a tin can that, you know, got me clean. Yeah. And then at the end you're like, hey, I have an ice cold Coke. I would drink that down pretty much exactly like Rita Wilson does in this movie. So it doesn't bother me. And it's more realistic that it's Coke than garbage pee water Pepsi. I'm looking right at you, Back to the Future.
But like, Pepsi Plus or Pepsi
whatever,
what
it's all garbage.
Pepsi Mega?
Pepsi Perfect. At least he orders, at least in this movie, they drink a real
soda. That was my thing. I was like, okay, yeah, these are people who are in the Peace Corps. They don't have American amenities. This makes sense that a simple little thing like a Coke would be an awesome treat.
But I wonder if, I wonder if this is just because in the age we live in, product placement is unbelievably prevalent, and maybe just 30 years ago it wasn't, and so it was more of a shock for people to be like, what the hell, there's just basically a Coke commercial stuck in the middle. Meanwhile, like in a current movie, like, you know, Adam Sandler puts legitimate commercials into his movies at this point.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's just one of those situations of, hey, it was just different back then and people freaked out about it because, you know, it was weird, but now we're like, hey, whatevs. So he and Rita Wilson are like making out a little bit, and she's like, come inside, let's go to Bone Town. And he's like, nah,
I shouldn't. Want that. I should be a good guy.
Yeah. And it's like such a power move that he's like, nah, it's cool. I'll come back for it later. And she's like, what? And he just like would rather have the power in the situation.
And he like than the make out. Saunters away.
Yes. And just cowboys out of there. Meanwhile, dude comes in from the helicopter and
in full like camo paint face.
Yep. And a helmet with branches taped to it.
And he is just like, hey, I'm in the CIA. Also, shut up. Also, come on, let's go.
Also, I have a knife. Take your pants off. And she's like, wait, what?
And she's like, and I'm going to go call someone around, because you have malaria and are clearly not right in the head.
And he's like, nah, take your pants off. And she's like, no, what are you talking about? And then he like just chases her around with a knife for a while.
No, then he puts a rag to her face and says, quote,
oh, yeah,
it's only chloroform.
Yeah. Shh, like, it's only chloroform. What the hell? And then he starts bitching at her lifeless corpse because she got rid of the fertility idol and he can't deal with that.
Yeah, because it's creepy, dude.
Yeah, he's a monster. Brosley. Like I said, I was expecting a turn for this character. I was not expecting him to chloroform and then try to rape a woman.
Yeah, Rita Wilson got the short end of the stick.
Because later on, he shows up and she's like waking out of a drug-induced stupor and he advances on her with the chloroform rag again.
Mm-hmm.
It's so creepy. So creepy. So
this is when he tries to bed... What's her face? The Lady Deathstrike.
Yeah, Tom Hanks is talking to her and invites her into the bar. And poor Getty keeps popping in like, hey, yo, she's going to kill you. And he's like, get out of here, man. And he pops in again like, no, she's going to kill you. And he's like, dude, get out of here. And then finally he comes in from the window and does like a friggin' top rope drop kick and crushes Tom Hanks out of the way as Lady Deathstrike smashes her fingers into the bar. Like, by God, out of nowhere, the drop kick from Watanabe. And then he's like, Tom Hanks is like, what on earth are you doing? And she's got her fingers in the bar and looks like she's playing an invisible piano.
It does. It looks like she's holding out a note on the invisible piano.
Yeah, she's even doing like a Ray Charles chest thrust thing, like a head bob chicken thing, where she's like, I'm stuck.
And then
also,
then they tie her up, and but they just talk about it. They don't show you.
Right. They just allude to the tying to the chair. And then
this is where they read the subtitles, like a yes, Austin Powers movie.
Exactly. It's just such a tone shift, it doesn't make any sense, because this movie is fairly normal and straightforward. It's not doing anything along those lines at all, and then just randomly it's like, oh, by the way, we're doing this weird, hokey, over-the-top thing of like, oh, reading our own subtitles, ha 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 ha, aren't we hilarious? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest problem with the movie, is that tonally it never decides what it wants to be.
Right, it shifts back and forth from being like a fairly silly romp to... being somewhat socially aware to back to the stupidness.
But, and being kind of, meta and being not.
Right. But I think we glossed over that Tom Hanks and John Candy helped the natives build a bridge in all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And they built like a really ridiculously nice looking bridge that has...
It's a suspension bridge.
Right, but it has bolts and wires and stuff that it doesn't appear that they ever had in the jungle. And they were like... cutting down trees to make the planks out of the trees, which is like a 25-step process. It's not just like you chop the tree down and then it's a board.
Yeah, it's not like in those Jim Beam commercials where they just hit a barrel and it becomes bottles. You don't just hit a tree with an axe and it becomes a pile of 2x4s.
Right, like you gotta fell the tree, you gotta strip the bark off it, you'll scale the logs, you gotta cut it into your planks, then you gotta smooth the planks, it's like a lot of work that they do in a very short amount of time because Tom Hanks is motivated to win $50,000 or $60,000. But then they end up with this ridiculously nice bridge that becomes the big crux of the movie where Rita Wilson's been kidnapped, we can't figure out why. Then we find out that our helicopter pilot friend is actually working with the giant evil supervillain, Kim Jong-un, and they decide to go rescue Rita?
Sure. And then it becomes Scooby-Doo, where they...
That's right, you're right, you're totally right.
Where poor Tom Hanks picks up Rita Wilson and has to carry her through this entire chase sequence like a fireman.
This is where I alluded to before with the chloroform, where... Tom Hanks is hiding in Rita Wilson's room and she's all out of it like, Tom Hanks, what are you doing here? And then creepy helicopter pilot guy comes in and is like, what are you doing awake? I guess we need more chloroform. And Tom Hanks hits him in the head with something. And then they have like an awkward fight in the room that I think Getty saves the day, doesn't he?
Only by distracting.
He kind of plays short round to Tom Hanks' Indiana Jones in this
movie. He only saves the day by distracting helicopter pilot.
Right, which is all you really need out of a sidekick, isn't it?
Fair enough.
So we're in this big hideout castle fortress at this point, and
Castle Grayskull, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And it's time to escape. The dramatic chipmunk music cues it up. You know where you're at, and we have to get out. So it's this sort of Scooby-Doo-esque.
Oh, it's 100% Scooby. Yeah, it is like Scooby, Scooby-Doo. Where is Tom Hanks?
Because it's got those sliding doors that you see.
The feudal Japan doors.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you watch a lot of Hayao Miyazaki stuff, yeah. He often has
they use those doors.
Totoro has those doors, and they're just randomly like slide a door open. Oh, no, there's a bad guy in there. Shut up real quick and run away.
I really want to see, but they weren't. It wasn't even that. It was like slide one door, go another 2 feet. turn to your right, open another door. Like, I want to see the top-down view of this fortress, because there's no rhyme or reason to this layout of where the doors are placed.
I think that would be so much fun if they did it like the map sequence in the first beginning chase, and it was like instead of just like a top-down, like a literal maze that they were like watching Tom Hanks like, oh, dead end, back up.
Or like mice, when you look at, when they have the mice find the cheese.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm into it. They also have a really cheap gag where they open up the door and, oh, it's the bad guy taking a poop.
It's Javier Bardem taking a poop.
Javier Bardem?
Isn't that what he looked like in one? He had the same haircut as Javier Bardem in one of his movies, didn't he?
Oh, maybe. I didn't put the connection together. But so we have a nice, yet again on the show, a sequence where someone's taking a poop.
Vince McMahon had a little, he was a runner on the show.
And Vince McMahon and Stephen King got together. See episodes 5 and whatever one No Holds Barred is.
No Holds Barred's earlier than that, I think.
It might be. And, Maximum Overdrive is definitely number 5, though.
And instead of realizing that these are the people he's trying to capture and kill or whatever his plot was, that I don't really remember.
Yeah, well, that's not really that important.
He just sits there and looks at them with his newspaper.
Yeah.
And is like, what? And they're like, they shut the door and run. And it's like, no, you would do something with it, even if you're pooping. Like, you're evil. You're Kim Jong-un.
He's like mid-loaf and he's just like running after them.
Yeah.
But then you have to have him like running with like poop falling down.
Oh, because this movie's so highbrow.
I think there's a difference between this movie's lowbrow and literally a character running down a hallway with poop falling out of their butt.
Is there really that much of a difference,
though? I think there's a line.
Like a hair's breadth?
Yeah, I think it might be a thin line.
It's a razor thin line.
It's the thin brown line, and they don't want to cross it. So we get to, like, fast-forwarding a bit here, because there's a bunch of stupid hijinks.
They rolled the pot.
That's what I was getting to. Yeah. So they all pile into a large jar or vase.
Okay, you say they all pile as though everyone in their group had a say in what they did.
That's
and
true.
And poor Rita Wilson was just tossed into it, because supposed to be knocked out.
And then Getty hops in right mm-hmm. after with, like, Tom Hanks kind of, like, pushing him down into it.
Like, why wasn't she put in second so that someone could, like, finagle her out of the way for when other people climb in behind her? Like,
that's a good
Getty,
point.
You in first. Now take her and hold her as I climb in, instead of just be like, throw her in, we'll see what happens.
We're going to treat Rita Wilson as an airbag. We're just like, in she goes!
It's like, it's another Elizabeth Shue situation.
It's absolutely Elizabeth Shue situation. So they hop in this thing, and then they're like, all right, throw your weight forward, and they start rolling down a set of stairs, and, like, bad guys are going down like
bowling pins.
Yeah. And it's got, like, really cheeseball sound effects, and then at the end, they have that stereotypical,
pot shatter.
Yeah, from zillions
Legend
and zillions
of Zelda,
of yeah.
predominantly.
Yeah. And they hop out, and they're all kind of dazed, and they're like, all right, what are we going to do now? And they get to a window, and then Getty doesn't want to jump out a window, so he basically just shoves him out a window.
Yeah.
Into a river. And the bad guys do the, like, stick their head out the window and shake their fist thing. So we fast forward a little bit. We're back at camp, and Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson have realized all the work they've been doing here is really detrimental to the society that already existed, so let's blow up the bridge.
F you, America.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, in this instance, they're 100% right. Like, hey, we're going to go into your sacred forest and chop down some trees. Who cares if it's your sacred forest? We don't. And then we're going to...
We definitely don't. All of you. We definitely do not care.
And then we're going to build you a bridge that you haven't asked for and clearly have no need for. And then it's going to be taken over by this drug lord because...
It's always been like the flimsiest reasoning of like, we're going to build this bridge because...
Well, I mean, you can't really have a movie where they're like, hey, we're going to go teach first aid and humanitarian
stuff.
Well,
no, like, I understand, but it could be like... It could be something as simple as... There is another civilization on the other side of the river, and we want to bridge the gap between them.
Yeah.
And, like, that, literally any reason beyond, let's just build a bridge.
Right. Well, I think that's the point of the bridge building, but it's one of those things that, you know, we didn't talk about this before with the bridge, but, you know, when anthropologists study societies and groups, and in this case, obviously, this tribe has had contact.
They tend not to completely...
Well, they
warp everything.
They try not to touch it. They try to stay completely away from it.
Jane
Goodall and the
that
apes.
One, but what am I? I'm thinking of the.
Although she, I guess, interacted pretty heavily with.
She
them.
Did. She
yeah,
was there.
I guess that's a bad example.
That's the Meerkat Manor.
Oh, okay.
It's like Meerkat
Manor. I don't know anything about Meerkat.
You know
Manor.
Anything about Meerkat Manor?
No.
They just set up the camera. They went in there and set up the cameras and then left and just they took the footage, but they didn't. There was no one there to like monitor. Like someone could go in and like, you know, batteries and tape and stuff.
Right.
But for the most part, so like when meerkats died or like were attacked, they couldn't do it. They didn't do anything about it. They were like, well, this is
Right.
Circle of life.
Right. You're supposed to show the thing that's happening, not affect it. So that's a thing, anthropology as well as study of animals, not which is what would that, zoology? Maybe? I don't know.
Zoology is definitely the study of animals.
Okay.
Cryptozoology is a study of made up animals.
Okay. So anthropologists as well as zoologists would try not to affect the people that they're studying, but this is more of an interactive thing. Like, obviously this tribe has known that there's other people out in the world. They're not like one of those closed off things. So, but it just seems so weird that they're like, all right, we're going to completely change your lives. We're throwing you a bridge that you're going to use.
I think that's the plot of Eli Roth's new movie.
The Green Inferno?
Yeah. That it's a closed off society.
Oh, yeah. That
other people and lose their minds.
It actually almost legitimately was a closed off society. They had never seen, we're going to go on a little tangent here, but I was listening to an interview with him because I was kind of intrigued by the idea of the movie, even though I don't really have any interest in watching cannibal stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he's just kind of boring to me.
They had never seen a lot of, like, they knew other people existed. They knew there were other, I think they had even seen white people before, but they hadn't interacted to the degree, and they ended up getting them all bartering and giving them all candy and soda and stuff. And then every time they came back with like fresh supplies, they'd be like, so where's the candy and the soda? And they ended up like getting this poor tribe
hooked up.
Yeah. So it's like this remote tribe is now.
Now they get to be neck down fat.
Yeah, exactly. They're all 6 o'clock news tribes people now because they've completely ruined them. The other thing
I want to see like the tribe news being done live, where it's just two people sitting behind a rock, like giving the news, and they like hold up like a palm leaf in front of a fat person's face as they walk around.
they also had never seen ice before, which makes sense because they didn't
ever. Oh, wow. I never thought about that. That makes perfect sense.
So ice was a big thing that they were kind of blown away
by. Drinks
about.
Can be cold?
Yeah. Anything can be cold. You can store food and stuff. Anyway, that's our minute on Eli Roth's dumb movie. So they decide, like, all right, it's time to, we have to blow up the bridge. And in comes John Candy, still brainwashed at this point, to be like, no, American pig dogs.
With, like, a 7-foot wick on the dynamite.
Yeah, and he's got lit dynamite, and he's holding it, and he's yelling, and they're trying to, like, fight to get the dynamite out. And then Tom Hanks tackles him, and Getty with a machete.
No, I think Getty tackles, and...
Oh, did I get that backwards?
Yeah, Getty tackles because Getty finally gets to do something.
Oh, that's successfully. Well, he did deliver that sweet missile drop kick to the
Tom Hanks.
No, he sweet missile drop kicks the lady with the fingernails.
No,
he kicks Tom Hanks. You're right.
Out
no,
of
he
the
totally
way.
Is. Yeah, he is right. But he still does deliver a sweet top rope missile drop kick.
So Tom Hanks chops off, so it's now a millimeter of wick. And so they're like, well, we gotta blow up, and in my head I went, oh, I get it now. He realized, like, this is the only dynamite they have to blow up the bridge, and there's a millimeter of wick left, so Tom Hanks is gonna sacrifice himself and realize, and like, he's gonna be a good person and redeem himself, because he's gonna sacrifice himself to blow up the bridge. And then, nope, turns out we just have a shit ton of dynamite.
Yeah, like, crate after
it's basically
crate after crate of
dynamite.
View
to a kill dynamite.
Yeah. And then they have these crates of dynamite, literal crates, like, the size of a large, like, bigger than a case of beer, full of dynamite, and they're running down the bridge with a wire, and like wiring up to the thing, wire
to drop plunger.
To a plunger. And but the thing that I found just so strangely fascinating is obviously they're going to blow this bridge up, and there's going to be a lot of debris in this river, and it being 1985, they probably aren't going to be catching it downstream and pulling it out.
Oh no, absolutely not.
So obviously lots of crap's going in the river, but they decide to throw the crates in the river as they use them up, instead of just like leaving them on the bridge. Like, they take the extra step of like, yeah, F you, nature. Boom, crate in the river.
Screw you, river.
Eat this, fish. Oh, wait, you can't. It'll kill you. Ha ha. And so they keep throwing these crates in the river, and the whole time I'm just like,
why?
You're going to blow up all of it. Why would you just leave it there? Who cares? Why are you like aggressively throwing the crates in the river? So, of course, because this is a movie, it doesn't get wired up properly. And we
you
have
mean,
to.
Of course, because they're natives who have no knowledge of engineering and wires
but
and technology.
Tom Hanks and John Candy are the ones actually wiring the
stuff.
I
thought the tribesmen were there, too.
They were they're like, the tribesmen are taking the dynamite out and placing it, and then running behind them is Tom Hanks and John Candy, like, click, click, wired up, click, click, wired up. They're doing all the, like, technological part of it. So they push the plunger, and nothing happens. And, of course, on one side of the bridge is the evil drug kingpin, and the other side of the bridge is the people who brainwashed John Candy, like, advancing. So, like, oh no, we have to run back and fix this. So, inexplicably, there's a rope that's from the shore to the middle of the bridge. That's
it's dangling.
And Tom Hanks is like, well, I'm just going to shimmy across this instead of running up the bridge.
I don't know why I can't just run across the bridge.
Even from the context of the movie, it makes a lot more sense for him to run up. Because the it's not like he had to run through the evil people. They weren't there yet. So instead he's like doing like a weird gym class rope climb.
It's kind of what you see when someone like in a movie holds on to the bottom of a helicopter.
Yes.
It's that crawl. He does that crawl.
And he inches his way across, gets there, and he's just about to wire it up when who shows up but our pal the pilot with his buddy Mike. Mm-hmm. And they have to have a fight about
it's not this. You can't even call this a fight, though. He, like, sets it up. Like, he monologues for a minute. He's like, I'm going to take you out. And then he just pushes him off the bridge. And that's it.
And then as Tom Hanks dives off after him, they push the plunger and the bridge explodes. Props. It's a cool explosion.
It is a great explosion.
Lots of debris, lots of wooden shrapnel practical, and everything.
Super practical.
Yeah. And it not even like, you know, now often you get, it was practical, but we CGI'd it into this other place. Like, obviously they blew up a bridge on this river.
Yeah.
Which is probably a sad thing for the production designer now that I think about it. Like, he's just all like, hey, you're going to build this really nice bridge and then we're just going to blow the hell out of it.
It could have been a miniature.
It could have been. That's true. And then,
because you can make a lot of miniatures for similar, you know,
fraction of the cost. Yeah, that's a good point. Although it did look like they fully constructed a bridge at some point. There were cars on it.
Well, maybe it was a real bridge that they like put in this location
and ruined this society anyway.
Yeah, these tribes people, they're like, oh, F you guys, this, we're not actually blowing it up. They're like, oh, thank God, you're gonna blow up the bridge. Like, no, we're doing that back in Hollywood. Deuces.
So explosions, everybody's happy. Then they think Tom Hanks is dead because he's like just
drifts up river,
floating there lifelessly. And Rita Wilson starts to give him mouth to mouth.
And he, Wendy, peppercorns her.
Absolutely, totally, 100%.
And she's into it. Because ladies are always into it, apparently.
Well, to be fair, in this instance, she was into it like 2 days ago.
That's true. Okay.
So at least we've established beforehand that like she likes him and he likes her and they just haven't had their kiss yet. Whereas
Have they not had their kiss yet?
No, because remember she invites him in and he turns
around. Oh, I thought they kissed before that and then she invited him in.
Oh, maybe they did kiss. I thought they didn't even kiss. I thought he pulled like the ultimate power move of like, nah, babe, you're good. I'm good. We're going to see this down the road.
Shh. You don't want to do this.
Yeah. And then like, bouncing. So she makes out with him a little bit. Everybody cheers and hoos and hollers.
Woo!
And we get to, you know, cut to end of the movie. Tom Hanks writing a letter to his father. Dear father, so we've established such a wonderful society here.
I'm building a casino. Name's Bottom Tooth.
I won't be coming home. Thank you for all that you've done for me. Oh, also, I found a woman. We're going to get married. Bye! And that's the end of the movie. Credits. You know, they walk off with a bunch of tribesmen, and he's like throwing gum at them again.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know if we said that earlier, but earlier he threw gum at the tribesmen like it was money. And then that's the end of the movie.
Do we ever find out what happens to John Candy? Like, is there a...
We just assume that he went home, because he's not shown in the, like, hey, happily ever after sequence.
I wish they had done the Animal House.
Oh, yeah, the underneath thing?
The, like, freeze frame. John Candy went on to not be brainwashed anymore.
Yeah.
And went back to Tacoma, Washington.
And then he built more bridges.
And he just built bridges for the rest of his life.
Tom Hanks and Ray Wilson opened a casino and stole all the money of these poor people who didn't understand what gambling was.
Until they explained it. And also got them hooked on sugar and tobacco and alcohol.
Yes. And now they own all of the chickens in the village because that's what they gamble with. And then we have like Mike, the knife with freeze frame.
Mike and his knife got married.
No, Mike is the knife.
What's his name then?
John, I think.
Mike and John. Mike and John got married.
Oh, no. I was going to have Mike go do something else. Like Mike got separated from John.
And John
went their separate ways. Like, Mike floated downriver and was found by a small boy, and like they grew up to have adventures together, and John just got like arrested.
Okay. That works too.
So, final thoughts on Volunteers? I think it has some charm to it, and it's definitely...
It's not the worst thing Tom Hanks has ever done.
No. Like,
it's not Polar Express.
No. Well, yeah, that's different and horrifying in its own way. It's interesting, you know, obviously he's early in his career and he's probably just taking whatever jobs he can get. I'm assuming he wasn't in a position where he's got lots and lots and lots of offers.
This is post-Bosom Buddies, right?
It is post-Bosom Buddies.
So he's, like, not blown up, but he's
right. This is in the era of Hanks doing The Man with One Red Shoe and Bachelor Party and Turner and Hooch. Like, he wasn't in a lot of great movies, but you could see him being the shining star of a lot of them. Although he did make Splash before this, which is a pretty good movie.
Yeah. If I remember, I loved Splash. I haven't watched it in a while, but I did love Splash as a child.
I haven't seen it it like within the past year to tell you it's great, but I remember everybody, you know, John Candy's good in that, Daryl Hannah's good in that, he's good in that. So I would say this is definitely watchable. It's definitely not my favorite Tom Hanks movie or anything like that.
I could watch this a second time.
Absolutely.
I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, it's a little long, but there's plenty of joke fodder here, so I definitely think this is one that you can enjoy.
You drink every time you go, huh?
Yeah, that's a pretty good one, because you're going to be confused quite a bit. Anytime someone does damage to the environment, you drink.
Both tonally and also what just happened.
Yeah, yeah. But also, you know, great addition. You drink every time there's a environmental crisis, because it's pretty much every 7 minutes this movie.
Drink something the EPA would weep.
Yeah, exactly. So should we do everybody's favorite segment? #taglines? #tagline. Volunteers. It's like Bridge on the River Kwai with way lower stakes. #tagline.
Volunteers. Don't volunteer for this one.
All right. So we should give the people a clue for next week, which is going to be a special fun episode, I think.
This is not the last time the series took a sharp downhill turn. Don't you forget about me.
Dissecting the 80s is a Chum Some of This production. Ow!
Welcome to Dissecting the 80s. I am one half of the Mega Podcasting Powers. With me, as always...
What's your name?
Yep, and I forgot to do a thing for you. I need a second.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did.
You forgot your own name.
I forgot that. But the reason I forgot my own name is because I realized as I was talking that I forgot to do a thing for you. Like a shmealy dealy.
Yeah, I know. Don't you have a list of like 80?
Yeah, no, they're all gone.
You used all of them?
Yes. One second. Would have a more interesting movie.
1 second.
What?
I have to go help Dad move a china cabinet.
All right, just leave it running.